This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
All right, I think those are all the announcements, and TR's already told me we're recording back there. And so tonight we are back in the book of Genesis. If you weren't able to be with us last week to see the video on the archaeological discoveries of the remains of Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plains, if you'll let me know if you want to watch it, I'll text you a link to it. You can watch it during the week on your own at your own leisure. You'll enjoy it. I promise it is interesting and eye-opening if you've not seen it before. But tonight we are back in the book of Genesis with our verse-by-verse study. We have finished the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah in chapter 19. That brings us now to Genesis chapter number 20. So we resume the story, the ongoing saga, if you would, of Abraham and Sarah and God's dealings with them. And so now we pick up with chapter 20, verse number 1. It says, "And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country, and dwelled between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar." All right, now we've only read one verse, but if you look over here at the whiteboard, I've got one of those crudely drawn maps by the preacher, but I want us to kind of review some geography, and then we'll look at some new things on here as well. First of all, we've got the main things that I think you all already know, but just so we can identify them and we all know what we're looking at on the map up here. Here's a big body of water. What's this big body of water? The Mediterranean Sea. All right, so here that is. And of course, this is the eastern portion of the Mediterranean. The further you go over, you have Greece, then you have Rome, then you have Spain as you move further west. All right, then up here just to the north, this is the modern-day country of what up here? What? Turkey, that's right. We've been studying the book of Acts in Sunday school. So Turkey, what's that? Asia Minor. In the history books, it's referred to as Asia Minor. And in the Bible, it's simply referred to by the Apostle Paul as Asia. But he's talking about Asia Minor, that big peninsula that juts out from Asia. Is there a little bit of feedback coming through my mic, or is it just in my head? All right, nobody hears any feedback but me. All right, Alex, what's this island just to the south of Turkey?
Cyprus,
there he goes. All right. Somebody's laughing, probably at the preacher's drawing here. What's this river with the delta here? That's the Nile River. So we know that if this is the Nile River, what's the land here called? Well, no, the Nile River runs through what country? Egypt. Okay, so here's Egypt down here, just so we know where we are. This is water right here. This is the Red Sea. It's got two little fingers, and in between the two fingers is a peninsula. What's the name of this peninsula that extends? It's located between Egypt and Israel today. What's this peninsula? It's in the news a lot. TR? The Sinai Peninsula? All right. And then as we move to the east and to the north, we move into this region that in history is Israel, and to the north of that is Lebanon, and to the north of that is Syria. I'm still hearing this, TR. TR, can you back me my volume down just a little bit on my mic? This area that includes Syria, Lebanon, thank you, TR, I think that might have gotten it, and Israel here, all of this area is called the Levant. It is the area between Egypt and Turkey. So all of this area along the coast, this is called the Levant. When you read in history or in Bible studies about the Levant, that's the region it's talking about. Israel, Lebanon, and Syria. All right, now, we already know some of these landmarks in the land of Israel. What's this body of water that's a little bit long down in the southern part of Israel? That's the Dead Sea, all right. And then that big body of water to the north, in the northern part of Israel, it is what? Sea of Galilee. All right, I'll just put Galilee. And then the river that runs between the two is the... this one in Israel, that river in Israel.
Jordan.
The Jordan, okay. All right, so we've gotten these major landmarks in Israel identified. Now some of the cities... The one with the star, or what should be a star if my marker wasn't so fat that I couldn't make a star, the star there is supposed to represent approximately where Jerusalem was located and, of course, still is today. We've already seen Jerusalem in the story of Abraham. It was called Salem when we saw it previously, but it's the city of Jerusalem. To the south of that is the little village of Bethlehem, and then if you go a little further south in the mountains... there is the city of Hebron. Hebron, of course, is a city on a mountain. It was inhabited early on by the giants of the Amorites, and it's the city that was, Caleb claimed it for his own possession when the children of Israel later on go back in and possess the promised land. But there's Hebron you read a lot about in the Bible. Down here to the south is a place that we saw here in chapter 20, verse number 1. It says that Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelled between Kadesh and Shur and sojourned in Gerar. Kadesh is this city right down here. It is, I've probably drawn it maybe a little further south than it would be on the map, but it is a city that is not only mentioned in the Bible, it's famous from world history. There were several important battles that have been fought there, in particular a famous battle later on in history between the Egyptians and the Hittites that lived up here in Turkey, Asia Minor, the Battle of Kadesh Barnea down here. But the city that it says that Abraham sojourned, that is, stayed in for a while, is this city right over here near the coast, but south of where the Philistines lived. It is the city of Gerar, G-E-R-A-R. So this is the place where Abraham and Sarah sojourned. That is, they went there and they stayed a while. Now, what we're going to read in the rest of chapter 20 is what takes place in Gerar when they get there. It is in some ways a new story, but in most ways it's an old story. It almost sounds like a repeat story of one we've already seen in Abraham's life, because almost the same circumstances take place when they arrive here as when they travel down to Egypt. Remember the story of Abraham and Sarai traveling down to Egypt and some things happened that weren't very good? Well, we're about to see second verse, same as the first. A little bit louder, but a whole lot worse, as the song went that we sang as teenagers. All right, so look at verse 2. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. So again, here we have Abraham and Sarah going into this place where they are strangers in the land. And Abraham, when they get there, he tells everybody, including the king of the city, that Sarah is his sister. Now, he's telling them that because apparently Sarah was a good-looking woman. Apparently, she was like Helen of Troy, because everywhere they go, Abraham's afraid he's going to be killed because everybody's going to want to marry his wife, so they'll murder him to be able to marry her. TR? Apparently, he did not learn the lesson with Pharaoh when they went down to Egypt, because this is exactly what he did when they went down there. Pharaoh kicked him out of the country, and he almost caused a lot of problems between God and Pharaoh's house, because God did not look favorably, nor does he today, on someone taking somebody else's wife and acting like they are unmarried and taking advantage of the situation. God was not happy with it then. He's not happy with it today when it happens. And that's what Abraham had done with Sarah. And so here again, he does the same thing. And Abram said of Sarah's wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. So he is courting her now with the intentions of marrying her. Now, I want to remind us, he is the king, but he's the king of this city. This was a situation similar to what you learned about in world history with the ancient Greeks as well. Every single city-state had its own government. Every city was its own country, for the most part. So even though they would have been related to all these other people living in the land of Canaan, they were all Canaanites of some sort, or most of them were, but they each ran their own affairs as a separate independent country, even though it's just a city, so it's called a city-state. So he's the king of Gerar, but he's not the king of the rest of the land. Nevertheless, he's the king there where they are. Verse 3, "But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night, and said to him, 'Behold, thou art but a dead man, for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife.'" So Abimelech has a dream, and God said, "Listen, you're a dead man. I'm about to kill you, because you're about to marry someone that's already married to someone else." That's how serious God takes this particular sin of adultery. Well, here's poor Abimelech. I'm sure there's plenty of not good things we could say about him if we knew all the history of Abimelech, but we don't know all those things. All we know is he's in a situation that was not of his making. He did not know the situation. All he knew is that Abraham had said Sarah was his sister, not his wife. So here's poor Abimelech, if we want to think of him that way. Verse 4, "But Abimelech had not come near her." That is, he was courting her, but there had been nothing physical that had gone on. "And he said, 'Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation?'" Now here's Abimelech talking to the God of the Bible. He's not talking to Molech or one of the false gods of the Canaanites. He's talking to our God, the God of Abraham. I want to remind us that, I know we've discussed it before, but at this point in world history, when Abraham has been called by God and is about to become the father of a new nation, this is still not too far removed from the flood and from Ham, Shem, and Japheth, Noah's three sons, being alive. Very likely that Shem was still alive at this time. And so we're in a time period where I know growing up, when I would read stories like this in the book of Genesis, I had the concept in my mind that no one but Abraham knew the God of the Bible. That's not the case. There were individuals all around the world. Remember, they still haven't fully scattered everywhere in the world yet, but they were beginning to scatter and spread out. But there were still individuals in every, or at least in many families throughout the human population, that were still true to the living God, that had not participated with the foolishness and the rebellion that went on at the Tower of Babel. There were still certain individuals throughout the human race that retained the knowledge of the true and living God after the flood and were still worshiping the true and living God, even though there's not a church at this point and there's not an Israel at this point, there were still individuals worshiping the true and living God. Now, whether this man regularly worshiped the God of the Bible or was just familiar with Jehovah, Yahweh, by whatever name we want to call him, he at least was familiar with the God who had destroyed the human race in the flood, except for Noah. They were close enough time-wise, chronologically to the flood. They all knew the story of Noah's Ark. They all knew who Noah was because he was all of their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather at this point. They all still knew the story, and they knew who the God of Noah was. So when Abimelech has this dream, he doesn't have the dream that this is, the God of Israel, because there's not an Israel yet. He has a dream that the God of, can we think of it this way, the God of Noah and the God of Ham, Shem, and Japheth. The God of creation, that's right, the Creator God, came to him in the dream and said, "You're a dead man, I'm about to kill you." So he's speaking to the God in this dream that comes to him, the one that he knows is the Creator and the one who destroyed the world with a flood. Abimelech knows who this God is. He said, "Wilt thou slay also a righteous nation?" He said, "God, why would you destroy me and my people? We haven't done anything wrong." That's what he's saying. And by the way, don't we have that same principle in American jurisprudence, American law? You're not supposed to punish the innocent, right? We go to great lengths not to punish innocent people here in our legal system. I mean, we will sometimes in our court system even let guilty people go because we're afraid we're going to end up punishing somebody that's not actually guilty. That's why you have to be found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, because we don't want to punish someone who's not guilty and then we be guilty. So he said, "Lord, surely you would not punish innocent people." Verse 5. "Said he not unto me, 'She is my sister'?" He said, "God, didn't he say me to me, 'She's my sister'? And she even herself said, 'He is my brother.' In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this." So here's poor Abimelech. He said, "God, he told me this was his sister. And she told me with her own mouth, he's her brother. How was I to know? I have done this thing innocently, in the integrity of my heart. I did not know she was married to the man. I thought she was just his sister." Verse 6. "And God said unto him in a dream, 'Yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart. For I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore suffered I thee not to touch her.'" God replies back to him and says, "Yes, I know you're innocent. I know you didn't do this on purpose. That's why I've kept you from going ahead and marrying her." They were still in the courtship phase, in other words. God said to him, "I'm the one that has kept you from going ahead and marrying her because I know you're innocent of heart." Verse 7. God tells him what to do. "Now therefore, restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet. And he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know thou that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine." God said, "Okay, here's what I want you to do. It's not your fault. You didn't know about it. I'm going to tell you what to do to fix it, and you need to go fix it." He said, give her back to her husband because he's a prophet of mine. Boy, what a horrible prophet he was, by the way, at least in this moment in time. He said, "Give her back to her husband because he's one of my prophets, and I'm going to have him pray for you, and I'm going to bless you because you did what was right." He said, "But if you don't give her back, I know she's a beautiful, good-looking woman, and if you decide to keep her and you don't give her back, you're going to die. And all that's yours are going to die." So God gave him a chance. God gave him a choice. We all like choices, don't we? God gave him a choice. Let's see what the choice is that he makes. Verse 8. Therefore Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their ears, and the men were sore afraid. I see here this obviously caused him to lose some sleep. It says he rose early in the morning. That is, he got up before the sun came up, I believe. Verse 9. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, what hast thou done unto us? What have I offended thee that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You get that? This is somebody that's not even, he's not a prophet of God. He obviously is familiar with the God of Abraham, but we don't know whether he was a righteous man and living for God and serving God. We don't know that, but this man is at least honest enough to say, hey, you're causing me problems that I didn't go looking for. He said, thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done. He said, I didn't deserve what you've brought into my house and into my kingdom. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what sawest thou that thou hast done this thing? He says, tell me why you did it. And Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. Notice what Abraham's answer was. He said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place. Now, that leads us to believe that Gerar and King Abimelech very possibly were not serving the God of Abraham. Were not necessarily serving the God of Noah, though he and they knew of the God of Noah. But it at least gives us the indication Abraham, he didn't think they were actively trying to serve the true and living God, even though they might have known of him, because he said, the fear of the Lord is not in this place. He didn't think that they would honor the marriage covenant that he had made with Sarah, and that they would honor God's command not to take innocent life. The command God gave Noah right after the flood, by the way, remember? Remember, it's the first law of civil government that God instituted was capital punishment for murderers. So he said, I didn't think the fear of the Lord was in this place, so I didn't think you'd respect God's laws, and I feared what you would do to me because you didn't have respect for God. Abraham's trying to put the blame off on them. He said, I didn't think you would respect God's law. But look what he says then in verse 12, and we've seen it before when we were down in Egypt. Look what it says. And yet indeed, she is my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. So Abraham married his half-sister, and that's who Sarah was. So it was not a lie that she was his sister, but they didn't give the important information that they were married together, which was the really important information. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, this is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me. At every place whither we shall come, say of me, he is my brother. In effect, Abraham said, I made her make a promise to me that everywhere we go, she would just tell everybody she's my sister so that they wouldn't try to kill me. I don't think that says very much for his character, but that's what he's admitting here. Verse 14, and Abimelech took sheep and oxen and men servants and women servants and gave them unto Abraham and restored him Sarah his wife. And Abimelech said, behold, my land is before thee. Dwell where it pleaseth thee. Now, in verses 14 and 15, we see Abimelech's response to Abraham. What did Abimelech give to Abraham at this point? T.R.? Yeah, he gave him, as T.R. said, commodities that his city had. sheep and oxen, servants, and even let him choose where he wanted to live in his kingdom. He gave him the choice real estate. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but in my mind, that doesn't seem like something you would do to this fellow that almost caused you and the rest of your kingdom to be wiped out by the hand of God. He is being extremely gracious to a man that doesn't deserve it. Why is he doing that? To get off the hook with whom? With the Lord. TR? Well, he certainly was a believer that God was real at this point, that's for sure. Maybe that's it. He hadn't had any direct dealings with God, and this was the first one in a while, and he wasn't taking any chances. I think it's because he respected the fact, as you all are alluding to, that God had said, this man is my prophet. So he's not giving these things to Abraham because Abraham deserved them, is he? No. He's giving him these things and doing these things for Abraham because he's God's prophet, not because he deserved the things he was doing for him. That goes back, though, to what we talked about when we talked about the Abrahamic covenant. Remember how we spent a good deal of time one night talking about the Abrahamic covenant and whether it was a conditional covenant or an unconditional covenant? And which did we say the Abrahamic covenant is? Unconditional. That God said, I'm going to do these things for Abram, period. And why did we say that it had to be an unconditional covenant? That's right. Because if it had been conditional, like some of the other covenants in the Bible, Abraham would have blown it on more than one occasion. Here's the second time with the same situation here where he would have blown it. And if he had blown it, and it was a conditional covenant, it would have not only meant Abraham's loss of God's blessings and his family's loss of God's blessings, who else would it affected? Everyone and God's relationship with man. That's right. Because through him, all families of the earth were to be blessed. That is, with the coming Messiah, coming through his lineage. So God made it unconditional for our sakes, as much as for Abraham's. Here's another situation where Abraham was clearly in the wrong, did not deserve God's blessings, but he still walks away with more cattle, more sheep, more servants, and a good piece of real estate, even after doing wrong. It's not because God was blessing his disobedience or his rebellion or his sin. God was blessing him for our sake, not for Abraham's sins' sake. God was blessing Abraham to show Abram and to show the world that he's a great God and a gracious God. And I bet if you think about your own personal testimony, there have probably been some times in your life where you didn't deserve the blessings God gave to you. But weren't you glad God gave them anyway? And weren't you glad he was merciful and didn't give you some of the stuff you did deserve? Yeah, we're all there, aren't we? So I just say this to remind us, this is an unconditional covenant God had made with Abraham. And even in the midst of, once again, Abram's sin, God is still blessing him, as we see here with Abimelech. Look at verse 16. We've seen how Abimelech responds, what he says to Abraham. Now he turns to Sarah, who apparently was standing right there too, when he confronts Abraham. Look what he says to Sarah. And unto Sarah he said, behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of the eyes unto all that are with thee and with all other. Thus she was reproved. He starts talking to Sarah and he said, listen, I just gave your brother 1,000 pieces of silver to be your protector. He said, now go on your way. It says, thus was she reproved. That means he scolded her. How was he scolding her? He responds to her. He said, listen, I just gave your brother 1,000 pieces of silver for you to be your shield, your covering over your eyes. You know how women in the Middle East even today wear veils over their face because only their husbands are to see them uncovered. And he said, I've given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver to be your covering and protect you from all others. He said, now, shoo, go on your way. Notice he didn't say, I just gave your husband 1,000 pieces of silver. He called Abraham the same thing Sarah had called him, her brother. Now, he knew that Abraham was her husband, but he didn't call him her husband. He said, I gave your brother, you know, you told me he was your brother. I just gave your brother 1,000 pieces of silver to be your covering. Now, get out of my palace, out of my house. Thus was she reproved. That's what it's telling us here in this verse. She went away ashamed and embarrassed, I believe. Verse 17 says, so Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Apparently, Abraham and Sarah had stayed there in Gerar for a while because the whole time they were there, neither King Abimelech nor any of his household had children. So that means they were there longer than a few weeks, longer than a few months, must have been there several years, because the whole time they were there, nobody got pregnant in his household. God had shut up their wombs, and they were going to stay that way had they not responded the right way when God spoke to King Abimelech. So, again, a very interesting story. In some respects, it's a little more interesting than Pharaoh down in Egypt. We get the extra information here that we didn't receive back when they were down in Egypt, that she is, in fact, his sister, his half-sister, but he still did wrong because he did the same thing he did with Pharaoh. He didn't tell him that it was his wife, just that she was his sister. But we see that God is still blessing Abraham in spite of his sin, because God is going to continue to use Abraham, and he and Sarah are about to get the biggest blessing of all in spite of what they've been up to. All right, any questions or comments this evening? We finished 15 minutes early tonight. Rarely happens. Probably won't happen again for the rest of the book of Genesis, but it was a fairly short chapter here. Any other questions or comments? Yes, sir?
Yeah,